Hello, welcome to Lead Tell TV. I'm your host, Brian Kramer, keynote speaker, coach of coaches, and author of HGH. Today's guest is Carla Johnson, global keynote speaker and author of 10 best-selling books. In this episode, we talk about how to architect teams to innovate faster, how marketers can start with the experience they want to create in mind first, and listen in as we get her perspective on how she moved her family and both lived and worked abroad for a year while having her best year in business. So let's get into it. Here's my interview with Carla. Carla, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is good. I always love talking with you, and I want to jump right in. I want to get really get going on all the good stuff. You have been doing some incredible things over your career. You've written 10 books, I think.
Working on number 10,
and we'll talk about that a little bit. But first things first, I actually just want to jump right into this really awesome speech that you gave at Content Marketing World, and I believe in other places all around the world, about your architecture of teams, because you have this fascination, from what I understand, with teams and how they can perform differently and better. And so why is that? Why do you believe that they are or are not working the way that they should?
You know, thanks for asking, because I do love to talk about this, and I've been fascinated by the response that I've gotten from people about this speech that I started to give about the end of August this year. And it's looking at how do we rethink how we architect teams. And when you think of traditionally what happens when you look to fill a position on your team, you know, you reach out to HR or you pull up the job description from the last time you hired somebody and you kind of dust it off and you updated a few things here and there. But what we really look at when we hire people is that we look at the role that we want them to fill. So we're looking at job descriptions. And I've had a lot of my clients have me look at resumes of people that they're looking at hiring for marketing. And I got to tell you, marketers are on their sales game when they're trying to stand out from the crowd with what they do. And I see titles like the Marketing Jedi, the Digital Overlord, and wacky things like this. But what it does is that it puts so much of an emphasis on a role that we want to fill or a job description. And that's very different from an archetype, because when you look at a role in a job description, it's really how you want people to perform in a particular situation. You know, we want them to perform as a digital marketer, as a content marketer, as a vice president of marketing. But when you look at how people really come out and show their genius at work, it's really more related to an archetype. And that's why we end up saying things like, well, let's get Brian because Brian's really a people person, or let's get Carla because, you know, she'll talk to anybody about anything. And archetypes are how we naturally show up in the world. And why I started to talk about this is because I believe we need to rethink how we structure teams. And instead of focusing so much on all of these roles, we need to look at the archetypes of people, because that's really what's going to help us reach across departments and start to break down silos and look at the work that we do from a really different kind of perspective.
So do you think that marketing teams have been, could operate more efficiently, that they're not structured the way that they should or could be, and your these archetypes would give you, what would they give you? What would the outcomes potentially be here?
You know, one is that you get a much higher performing team because the people on the team are more aligned. So when I look at the archetypes of the 6 archetypes that I found, and some of this is based on research that I've come across and some of it is just from my own experience, I found that there's 6 archetypes. And the first one is the strategist. And as a marketer, we know that that's a job role that we need to have. But there's a lot of people who do it naturally, whether or not that's in their job title or not. And then we look at the next one, and that's a culture shaper. And these are really the storytellers of a team. And we see this in marketing. Like, there are certain people who are natural storytellers, and they know how to take, you know, any kind of complex topic or product or whatever, and they can put it into something that people really like and can relate to. And then you look at, especially adding empathy to the work that we do now, and, you know, more human-centered business. And that's where we look at the archetype of a psychologist. You know, they're the ones who, I think probably the phrase that they hate the most is, it's not personal, it's just business. Well, it is personal, because if we're looking at how do we build these amazing experiences for customers, it has to be personal. And then from there, what we look at is, you know, who are the orchestrators, the people who are the fearless leaders? And there's a lot of conversation for marketing about how we now lead so much of an organization, you know, IT, we look at human resources, we look at owning the customer experience. But are we truly being fearless leaders in having those conversations that need to be had upfront and dealing with those things? And then from there, we look at the collaborators. And those are people who understand, you know, here's how we get everybody together, and here's how we reach across the silos and across the aisles and get people to work together. And then the last one is the provocateur. And these are those people who just cannot sit still and deal with the status quo. They're the ones in meetings who are always going, oh man, would they just like let it go already? Let's just get this done and get it out the door. So those are the six archetypes. And then if you look at how they all work together, each one has a strength that supports another one's weakness. So when we look at this as far as aligning teams, you can start to create some incredibly powerful marketing teams when you look at these archetypes that have nothing to do with their job titles or their roles.
Wow, that is, there's so many different ways. And as we were going through each one, I felt like I was just like a little bit of each one of those. Like there was, I was identifying with each one, and then sometimes a little more than others. And so is that possible that everyone is more than one, or is it usually you are the one thing?
Well, everybody has a primary archetype, but some of them may have a very strong second one, possibly a third, you know, that might feel similar. But what tends to happen is that people who are more aware of how they feel or aware of the dynamics in a team, they can relate to these different archetypes. And when they get into a team situation or a meeting situation, and maybe it's a lot of strategy and it can feel kind of dry and you're thinking, well, how's this actually going to play out? They can naturally pull that culture shaper, that storyteller forward, or the psychologist or the orchestrator when it comes to how do you get this stuff done. And I think sometimes it may not be that they actually are more than one archetype. It's just that they're very astute and aware, and they're practiced in filling in those slots where these other archetypes need to perform.
Mm. Oh, that's great. So now I'd love to shift just a tiny bit, because as you're looking at everyone performing on this team of, let's say, perfectly aligned or mostly perfectly aligned archetypes, and you've got this euphoric place that you're at, and yet marketing teams, at least what I make up in my head, is that they're performing with best practices that have been accepted for some time. You know, the actual goal of a marketing team is to put things out into the universe, right? So when we're using those best practices and putting them out, what are some of those best practices that you can't wait to see that you love, and then some of them that maybe you can't wait to see go away?
You know, when people start talking about best practices, I always tell them this: a best practice is a bench to sit on. But that's not what marketing is about, because marketing is in perpetual motion these days. So instead of always focusing on best practices, what I advise marketers to do is always look for the next practice, because what that helps you do is consistently innovate a best practice to make it better and better and better for your particular company, for your particular situation, and also for your particular career. Because while I want marketers to be amazing on a team and do a lot to contribute to their companies, I really look at what's the best thing that they can do for their career. And that's why I always want them to not use best practices as a crutch, but always look at, okay, this is really great right now, but what could be next that could be even better?
What do you think is a brand out there, maybe even a B2B brand that you think that you admire, and why is that? Like around some of these things, like they've put in, you know, archetypes, and they've put in, you know, the best of these best practices, and yet they're not using it as a crutch. And you can see that it emanates from that brand. You know what I mean? Like it really kind of it really shines through. What kind of comes up for you?
You know, and I tend to look for B2B brands. I mean, that's the companies that I've worked with the most. But I also think it's easier to do some of these things if you're in a more creative or innovative or consumer brand. But when I look at some B2B brands, and particularly those that are maybe manufacturing, in industrial type companies, those that are really, really heavy engineering based, I think it can be very hard to put these processes into place. That's why I am a huge fan of Emerson and their CMO, Kathy Button Bell, because I've seen, she's been there for 20 years, and I've seen that she has been able just to consistently and perpetually innovate little by little by little in the whole time that she's been there. And I can tell you, it is, that company is night and day now compared to what it was when she started there. And there's no such thing when you're in a maybe a traditionally stodgy, left brain driven kind of company, whether it's lawyers or accountants or engineers. You know, there's these huge opportunities for change, and even engineers and lawyers and accountants want to rally, and they want to have optimism about the work that they do. And I think she's done just an amazing job of consistently using small milestones that the company has to give people something to look forward to and to be optimistic and show up maybe in the usual places and ways that they do, but do it with an unexpected presentation. And, you know, things like big, bold, bright colors, music, you know, different things that are fun and different that are still palatable to such a left brain culture.
Oh, that's awesome. It sounds like she has helped everyone to shift the focus of this long journey and how are we ever going to get there to like really celebrating, like you said, the milestones and the things that matter the most. Do you find that in leadership often in what you're doing? Is that something that's unique?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's unique. And I think the leaders that do it the best are the ones who see times of change and maybe challenge. You know, it can be economic challenge, it can be something going on with their industry, that they use that as an opportunity to accelerate change in their organization. Because when something is different or there's a shakeup, everybody expects change. And so take advantage of that opportunity while people are always already mentally primed for it, and use it for a way to make that change maybe bigger, better, deeper, more profound than what you would have thought of otherwise. Because I think sometimes when there's big opportunities for change, leaders tend to tamper it because they say, we don't want to make employees uncomfortable, we don't want to give them too much change at once. But I think when you do it right, employees can handle a lot more change than leaders are ready to lead them through.
So when you do see an organization that is stuck in their old ways, what can a marketing team do, or even individual marketers, to help shift the focus to the back to the customer, or back to the rethink strategy of really, you know what I mean, building towards something that is innovative and new?
Yeah. And one of the things that I try to tell marketers over and over again is that they need to start to rethink the work that they do and the impact that they can have. So it isn't just around, you know, let's build digital campaigns, let's build web pages, let's do trade shows. Let's rethink it and start to say, okay, maybe it's not about those tactical execution things. Maybe what we need to start thinking about is, how do I become that that foundation, that inspiration for how we build a better relationship for the customer? Because that right there starts to give marketers a much bigger platform to talk to other people within the company than just to talk about marketing. And when they start to do that, what they can do, because, you know, they may want to introduce some ideas that are really different if there's provocateurs on their team, and that can be met with a lot of fear and a lot of pushback. So I always say, find another brand, another experience, another anything that you've seen that works really, really well, and use that as the inspiration for the idea that you have. And I tell them that for a couple of reasons. One is that if people can see that it's already been successful someplace else, it starts to bring down their walls, and they start to see an opportunity. You know, it worked for them. Maybe it could work for us if we can figure out how to do that. And just looking at, like, not the execution, but what's the essence behind that idea that made it work. You know, maybe it was about building community. Maybe it was about making customers feel more welcome or just having more fun. How can you relate that into the work that you do? And then what marketers start to see is that they can really have a bigger impact with the work that they do that a lot of times they never imagined.
Wow. Wow. It's such a fresh and unique perspective to think that that teams can change and people can change and a marketing department can look at themselves and say, we can help affect an organization, because oftentimes it's the marketing department that's trying to react to the organization versus being a proponent of change. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, absolutely true. But a lot of times that's only in marketers' own minds. People will box marketers in to the size of boxes that marketers allow them to be in. And I say that over and over. And I mean, will there be companies where marketers can never get out of the box? Of course, there will be a handful. But there are a tremendous number of companies where if marketing behaved different and started to talk differently and show up differently and talk about relationships with the customers differently, then their whole role and how they're perceived from the rest of the organization would change dramatically. And actually, I think a lot of marketers would be surprised at how fast it changes too.
Oh, beautiful. I would love to see that work come alive, especially as I know this is a huge piece of your new book that's coming out. And so talk more about that. Are these archetypes going to be a part of this new, the new book, and what more can we expect on how this might affect some change?
You know, and the book is called Rethink Innovation, How the World's Most Innovative Teams Come Up with Great Ideas and Turn Them into Extraordinary Outcomes. And I came up with this idea because Robert Rose and I wrote a book in 2015 called Experiences, the Seventh Era of Marketing. And what I found is that people would say this structure and this platform and this process is amazing, but now what we struggle with is, how do we get the right kind of people on our team so we can consistently come up with the great ideas that will fit into this process? And that's what sent me down the path of really digging into creative people, innovative people. And I'm a researcher at heart. And so I would research teams and people and say, okay, when you had that brilliant aha moment, back me up, like let's reverse engineer it and figure out what happened before you came to that idea. And what I found is all of these amazing innovators had the exact same process, whether they consciously realized it or not. And some of them did realize it and they just intentionally practiced it. Others, it was just something that came very natural to them. So in looking at this, it's about the ideas and how you consistently come up with them and pitch them, because a lot of ideas can be really great, but if you have a bad pitch, it's not going to do that idea any justice. But also looking at what's the organizational culture that you're creating so that you can build this culture really of original thinkers. And I call these six archetypes the citizen innovators, because I believe that everybody in an organization can and should have a responsibility to innovate. It shouldn't just be in this like little group of innovation or research and development, that really companies perform better when everybody contributes.
Wow. I can't wait to read it. It sounds fascinating. And actually talking about rethink, rethink. your own life. You took your whole family and you moved for a year to Spain. And you looked at, I mean, what that is something on everybody's bucket list, to move away and enjoy that. Not only that, you did it with teenagers, which I commend you for. And you operated your business from there and did that. So I would love to hear about that. But B, what kind of challenges did you also encounter in working remotely while you're doing that?
You know, the biggest challenge, to be honest, was how I rethought my own work structure and my own business. Because while I've had my business since 2001, and I've always said I can work from anywhere, it really was a way for me to say, okay, let's rethink this, and how can you work from anywhere? Because while I don't have much to my office, I'll be honest, I like my physical books, I like my regular space, I like my extra screen, I like all my things that are in a regular office. And so to take that on the road for a year, or rethink what my office would look like and work would look like, was a big thing for me to keep in mind. I do have to say, I have an amazing husband and three amazing kids who were, for the most part, gung-ho for this. And what we ended up doing is just, let's look at how is school different? Like, let's rethink what your school day looks like, because instead of going to a physical school, they took classes online. Let's rethink how our family interacts. Let's rethink what our housing structure can look like. You know, and different things. Like, all of a sudden, my husband and I had a lot of time on our hands that we didn't have in a traditional home here in Denver, because we didn't have yard work to do, we didn't have cars to maintain. Okay, now that we have that time, let's rethink how we use it and what we do and what we, how we structure our days, how we structure our weekends. And what I found is that with all of this change in perspective, and I mean, research shows this is true anyway, with international travel, it really spiked how we looked at what's possible, how to problem solve things. And it took us out of our default mentality. You know, especially as marketers, we have our habits. And instead of trying something new, we're like, well, this is the campaign we did before, so dust it off, change the dates, change some of the verbiage, and just throw it out there again. It really was creating everything from scratch, from new. And now coming back to the States, some of my original routine and structure and style I kept, but a lot of it I didn't. And I've brought things together piecemeal, and what my days and what my work looks like is a lot different now. But I think it's probably one of the most creative and also productive years I've had in my life.
Wow. I love that so much. And I think that just spoke to everybody who's now listening to this, and they're like, okay, how do I make that happen? I am so in awe of that. And I wonder too, if companies shouldn't make or couldn't make this a component of everyone's job, because think about how creative and more open they would be to their own career within a company. And how, I mean, don't you think companies should be offering or helping people to explore and bring that back into the company like you just did?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of times companies don't, because they think, I need to have people in a physical location to make sure they get their work done. And that to me goes back to a focus on a role versus an archetype. You know, we're focusing on how many hours is somebody spending at a job versus what are they actually getting done. And I mean, I hire people to work for me, and I care less about how long does it take, like how many hours do they spend on it versus what do they actually get done. And I think when companies start to rethink that, how they look at how employees show up and productivity, there's a lot of opportunities for them there. And I think also there are a lot of ways to stay connected. And one thing that was really important for me is, just like you and I are doing now, that as face-to-face as you can get with people, where it's focused and you're not multitasking, but you're really present, I think that is still pretty powerful with keeping teams connected and accountable to each other.
Oh, so I guess that whole human to human thing is something that's going to work out.
There's
for
something
everybody.
To hopefully
it. Yeah. Does at some point. So let's. I'm curious now in 2020, what's in store for you? Will you have any travel plans? Places you would love to go see that you haven't seen before? Conferences that you're attending? What's up for you?
Let's see. I do have some travel planned in a couple of weeks. I'm headed to Oslo, Norway, to speak at a to speak at a content marketing conference there. A few weeks after that, I'll go to London, and there's a book launch for the ninth book that I was a contributor to that for my ninth book. So we'll have a big party there to celebrate. I'm part of some LinkedIn events at the end of February. I'll be keynoting Reagan Communications Employee Communications Award Program in New York City, and things are still rolling out for March and April. I'll have this book finished soon, but I know it takes a few months then before it's out the door once my part is done. And I'm really looking at focusing on helping companies do exactly what you and I have been talking about, how to build those highly aligned teams based on these archetypes, because I've seen that it affects this high level of alignment, really turns ordinary teams into these extraordinary teams in a short amount of time when people understand the connections between these archetypes. So helping companies do that, and then also teaching them the rethink process of how actually to come up with great ideas that have a reliable performance on a really consistent basis using the 5-step framework that I have.
Oh man, I cannot wait to see it all unfold. And I am so excited just to be here at the very beginning, because I feel like this is you're gonna be everywhere next year. I mean,
it's gonna be really fun, busy.
So full of all kinds of data and ROI and attribution and MarTech
measurable results.
But I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for joining Leetail here on the show. And we cannot wait to see what you have in store, especially on your new book and everything else that's to come. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much, Brian, and also to Leetail. I love being here.
Hi, everybody. Spencer here on the Leetail team. We want to thank Carla Johnson for being our guest on the show today. If you'd like to continue the conversation, tweet us at Leetail or our guest at Carla Johnson.
If you want to see the full video interview series, you can find this episode and more at leetailtv.com. Please make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Have ideas for the show? Do you know someone who would be great to be a guest? Drop us a line at studios@leetail.com. Thanks.